Yeah, kind of like Davood talking about.
Hell no.
He had such a sweet one. I mean, I really loved yours.
Which one?
Your testimonial about like what Refocus means for you. It was really wonderful.
Because it was like my honesty, but about the school, of course. I'm going to say some shit.
Why are you saying you're not going to be honest about the school? You were just like that.
No, I'm honest. If I be honest about the school, you guys are going to throw me out from here.
No, I think it's very important that you're
but
honest.
But yesterday we talked about it. You are here, so you were honest yesterday.
Experience.
So you can be honest. We were just maybe trying
to... Not swear.
I would lie.
I'm the only one allowed to swear.
You know who I'm, you know who am I working to?
Welcome everyone to your favorite podcast, Fractured, and Happy New Year. And it's a new year, but it's the same for Fractured. We are still about advocacy, and I hope some of you set some goals for your New Year resolution to be more involved in advocacy, and why not help Refocus, because we really need your help. You are not perfect. We don't want to be perfect, so we really need your help. This episode is about refugee experience within the Greek education, and I have amazing guests here, amazing co-host, Douglas Herman. Happy to have you back here with us.
Exciting to be here.
Thank you. I have Elena Mustaka. Feel free to correct me if I said your name wrong. Elena Mustaka.
Perfect.
Amazing.
Happy New Year.
All right. Managing Director and co-founder of Better Days and Gecko Program. Can't wait to dive in into this organization with you. And Nuri Davud, my Refocus best friend and our baby monster here in Refocus. Welcome with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and let's go.
All right. Are you guys ready? We're going to dive in. So, Elena, you co-founder Better Days, but let's go back to the beginning. And you have been involved for many years in Greece. So how did you come up to this decision to be involved? Like personally, how did you?
I love it when people ask me this question, actually. I think as many of my very close partners in Greece for the past 8 years now have kind of found themselves accidentally or coincidentally responding to thousands of people reaching our shores. I started volunteering. I volunteered with a local, small local organization on Lesbos in 2015. And I think I committed to Better Days and to the mission of Better Days without really doing it very consciously. I don't think it was a decision that I took rationally.
So it was your first experience?
It was my first experience in crisis, I would say.
Okay.
I volunteer. I did my practice with the Ministry of Exterior in Cyprus. I've done a short internship with UNHCR in Cyprus as well. And my mother is an internally displaced refugee, so I have kind of a personal connection to that. But this was my first volunteer experience in like while a crisis was evolving. And yeah, as I said, I think it found me as much as I found it. I never planned to stay. I never rationally took the decision of like founding Better Days or waking up 8 years after still doing this so passionately and with infinite amount of commitment and determination. But at the same time, I've studied politics. I had a passion for human rights. I always advocated for people that were less privileged or fortunate than I was. My mother was definitely a figure in that sense because she had a very huge input in like working with refugees and orphanages in Cyprus and so forth. So am. This is how I found myself becoming maybe an aid worker, which is what I consider myself being now.
Wow. Cool.
You know, we know each other from Lesvos from the early days as well for a long time. But your organization, Better Days, has always been this this foundational community that's really always been relying upon the support of the local community as well as people who come internationally. But that community of refugees has really relied upon you. And you've won numerous awards as an organization as a result of that work. But I'm really curious about, again, it's a little similar extension of what Rashid's asking about, that moment when Better Days was first forming. How has it changed? How did it change over the course of this, from those early years all the way through until now? You have a program in Athens as well. But in those, I mean, it's a very long, tumultuous time on Lesbos. So I'm curious about how have you guys evolved as an entity?
Sure. I mean, we evolve firstly because we learn so much. We learn in action. We learn from our mistakes and from our achievements as well. And I think most importantly, though, is that Better Days was put together or founded by a team of people that kind of stuck together through the years. Kiki, myself, Dan, Andrew, who you know, and so many other people that remain behind the scenes still advocating for us and supporting pro bono and putting a lot of energy and time into Better Days growing in expertise and competence. I think personally have contributed a lot because I've always very intentionally tried to excel, and like excel in the sense of I wanted to know what is the best that I could do and try and get it, even if I wasn't gonna do perfect work. So we've always tried to reflect openly about our mistakes, and that is what I think built a good momentum with our partner organizations. We're always very open about the mistakes that we've done and how we can learn from them and share our failures as much as our successes, so they don't have to be repeated, or because they need to be repeated and they're best practices that are worthy of repeating. And I think in the process of everything and all the reflection that we've done, we've managed to identify the approaches that we feel are better suited for what we do. And that wouldn't have been possible without the ongoing dialogue and conversation that we open with the communities that we interact with, whether it's the Greek local community or communities of students and so forth. So I think I put it down to we have evolved definitely because we've learned a lot. And learning to us isn't just the formal learning that you get out of university, which obviously is very important, and the trainings that we do and all of that, but also the learning in action that we've accumulated over the years, and the dedication that we put in, the dialogues that we build and invest in with people like you and other partners that we worked alongside over the years. I hope that answered the question.
Of course. I went to your website and I was amazed by your philosophy in teaching with Gecko School. And I felt jealous because I would love to go back in time and enroll as a kid in your program, because I grew up in a really fucked up country with a really fucked up education system where I was constantly scared going to school. I did very well in school. I was really good, but that was just coming out of fear. I don't want to spoil your approach. So can you tell us a little bit about this amazing approach and why was it chosen?
Sure. I think, as I said before, our approach to education has evolved over the years. The one thing that hasn't changed is that we've relied always on the feedback that our students gave us and the observations that we made by investing in really committed, long-lasting relationship with them, which allowed us to collect a lot of information and data that we then could analyze so that we can make improvements. So I guess like a lot of approaches or epistemologies or whatever consist of, the philosophies consisted by, have been imposed on us sometimes from the field itself, you know. And then also we've copied paste because they were popular and they seemed to be effective. And then we slowly went through the elimination process of what didn't work for our students and for our institution and for what we wanted to achieve. And then open up to invite completely alternative and new methodologies into our space that seemed to work much better, which ultimately brought us to where we are today. And I guess what Better Days does differently in relation to education to other actors that do education is that we provide personalized education, which can be very labor intensive and administratively heavy, and requires sustainable funding, so like long-term commitment, really close communication with the students we work with, a very active two-way relationship. The student is not just a participant, like they're a serious stakeholder. We co-design the schedules with them. Our curriculum is not predetermined. It's determined by what the students want as well. So it's constant administration. I think my staff sometimes hate me. they have so much admin work to do. But ultimately, it pays off. It pays off for the students, for the kids. It pays off for us. Like the change that we see in the students we work with is huge and is really beautiful.
So it was worth it to invest all that time to prepare for this program, because I remember from Sonia, she told me that maybe you took like 1 year just to prepare for this thing and then you implemented it. So it was worth it, right?
Yeah, we've done a needs assessment at the end of 2022. Then we've done another one in 2023. And meantime, we were engaging quite heavily with certain groups of the population that we were either already teaching or that we aspired to teach, and had continuous dialogue and conversations again with people that were already working either on Lesbos or in Greece in education. And to be honest, no matter the time that you invest in preparation, the one thing that I at least was taught, and at least my philosophy about my work, is that you just need to be constantly fit to adapt and be very reflexive and open to the idea of creative chaos and constant change, because there's so many external factors that you can prepare forever and you'll things can change overnight. So with GECO in Athens, at least, we've done a lot of preparatory work. We've built an amazing space that, you know, like anybody from any background would want to be in, a safe, dignifying, beautiful environment that aspires learning and safety. Which was the first thing, met the highest health and safety standards, and then started experimenting and talking with the population and see what is that they want to do, what is that they want to learn. And in Athens, really, the population is very different than the needs of the population. The requirements are very different to the ones that our students had on Lesbos. So we learn every day, every term, things change at GECO. And as I said, this is labor intensive. It comes with a lot of anxiety and insecurity and chaos, but also it brings really solid results.
Cool, amazing.
We know a little bit about that experience of the organized chaos, right? And having to be reflective and reflexive and ready to change and adapt. And so we're with you on that. And I'm curious about, you know, Davoud has. Maybe at this point in time, hearing this, he's like really jealous that he's not already in the GECO community, because we're going to hear a lot about what it's been like for you in the education system here in Greece since you arrived. You came as an unaccompanied minor, which is actually what GECO started doing most on Lesbos, working with young people like yourself. And I'm just curious a little bit about when you first came to Greece, what were your, I guess, expectations of school when you were finally going to get a chance to be in school and you heard you were going to get support, what were you expecting from that access to school in a European country like Greece?
Actually, like, I wasn't like that much into the like Greek language. In the beginning, I really like was more curious to learn English. Yeah, to learn English because, you know, like my plan wasn't to stay here. Like it was just to be here, and you get your passport and you go to other countries as like other refugees do. Yeah, and then they registered me the first shelter. I was there, like they registered me in a really, really good school, like really high quality school, and it was really good. But I start to learn and some Greek language, because like in that moment when I was going to the school, like I had no idea about like how to talk English or speaking Greek. That's why like all the environment like around me in the school, it was just like Greek students, and they were talking like just Greek with me. And in first week, like at least I could say like yes, tikanis, or you know, kind of basic stuff. But when I changed my school, like the second one, no, it was like kind of different category for me. That's why I stopped. Yeah.
Go back to Elena. I was in, like I said, in your website, and the name Gecko. So I will read for you what you wrote. I will try to do the David Attenberg voice. Geckos are incredibly diverse, with great variety in size, color, and patterns. Among the 1,500 distinct species, resilient and adaptable, geckos can lose their tails in self-defense and regrow them until within just 30 days. How do you implement all these amazing characters from the geckos so in your teaching so the kids can take into them and implement in their lives?
I mean, I'm not really sure that we implement any of these characteristics in our teaching. It's definitely a part of our ethos. Like, we celebrate the metaphor, the selection of the animal was more of a celebration of what our student body represents. They're the most resilient people I've ever met, and they should be celebrated for their resilience and everything that they achieve under an insane adversity and obstacles. So I remember trying to figure out what we were going to name this project, and we were trying to create a name that will give us or give our students an identity that went beyond the identity of them being refugees. So we thought of Gecko because we thought that they're small but mighty and resilient and unbeatable in so many ways and so fast to bounce back. And, you know, like they had everything, all the characteristics and the attributes that we celebrated in our students, we saw and admired. We felt that this animal kind of represented. And the diversity behind it, like Gecko, right now at Gecko, I think we were represented by 24 nationalities and wow. 17 or 15 different languages. So it was very, I don't know, it fits really the mission of Gecko. And I guess there is a lot of the resilience and adaptation and like the attributes of Gecko and of our student is something that is embodied in the whole ethos of Gecko and the whole ethos of Better Days, as I explained before. So yes, there's reflexivity into our teaching, and we train our teachers to be protection focused, be able to observe and understand trauma and symptoms of trauma and know the pathways of how to deal with that, but also adapt their teaching methods depending on who they have in front of them. And it can be from having to do one-on-one tutorials because the child is agoraphobic and is still in a place where he cannot do a classroom in any way. It can be because there's cultural difficulties, restrictions, or any other restrictions that will prohibit a often female student from entering classroom. So how do we provide, how do we make education inclusive, and how do we address marginalized groups with intent, you know? So, like, yes, we are in so many ways, like, we relate in many ways with the attributes of gecko as an animal. But, yeah, I don't know if also that is, yeah, clear
enough. I like the you focus on trauma and how you deal with it. I worked with an NGO called Elix. I don't know if you know them. And we had the program called Baitna. It's a word in Arabic. It means our home. And we had the kindergarten for kids. And the goal was to play with them, not teach them. So it was based on play so they can feel safe, for example, because the best thing is to make a home for them and then you can teach them. And the parents were coming to us like, my kids doesn't know how to say ABC. We're like, hold on. We are still getting rid of the like the trauma and stuff. And they're like, no, I want them to learn this. And it was even pushback from the parents, but it was really amazing. And I would like to ask if this approach to teaching, can we implement it in public schools for non-refugee children? Because I believe that everyone is like traumatized and have some issues.
It's a difficult question. I mean, I think that there's been investment in developing and improving the Greek formal educational system. Whether that has been achieved or not, it's not up to me to really conclude on. But of course, what we receive and can analyze is the information that comes from the students, from our students that also attend public education, from students that have attended public education, had a really negative experience and then didn't want to go back to school. So how can we accompany you through a parallel, non-formal pathway into professional development, personal development, learning, etc. There's a lot of investment, financial investment, and policy discussion and development that, you know, promotes constant training of teachers, principals, staff to be able to diversify their teaching methods, adopt more cross-cultural, intercultural types of methodologies and so forth. So there's definitely been progress. And again, I'm talking about the Greek educational system. Now, whether we can do personalized education or come to a point where we can successfully integrate people from diverse backgrounds into regular classrooms, taking in consideration the trauma, but also other conditions that they bring with them, I don't really know if that can happen very easily. Like I've met 17-year-old kids that never held a pen, and then also like 12-year-old kids that were, you know, attended all their normal classes, years of education and so forth, and they've been in the same classrooms in non-formal education, or they've been in the wrong level of education, in public education, whatever the incident, they had really negative experience. They felt stagnated. They felt bullied. They felt discriminated. They felt not heard, not seen, not supported and escorted through their path so that they could fulfill the aspirations that they have for their own future. I think you gave a very good example before of like, I didn't speak English or Greek very well, and I wanted to invest in becoming conversational in English. However, you know, I was stuck in a classroom with Greek people and Greek teachers and didn't understand anything. That's profoundly impactful. You know, it creates additional trauma. It marginalizes the student in the classroom. It makes them feel less of a student, less competent than they are. It affects their social and emotional development and so forth. So we definitely need to address it. How are we going to address it? And if the Greek educational system is fit to, or even willing to such a huge leap of faith or growth anytime soon, I don't know. But we are committed to assist, and we are committed to continually, like, to adopt methodologies and respond to needs in a way that at least whoever does chose to trust GEGO with their educational journey has an opportunity to have a positive experience for a change in education.
Was there any attempt from the Greek government education to learn about you guys, what you're doing, your methods?
We informally worked with the... It's very difficult to be in education and not, and especially education for unaccompanied asylum seeking children, and not work with the government and the public school system. We had some very positive experiences where the heads of the schools and or the teachers responsible were really committed to supporting students that we had in common to make progress. So they will refer them to us, and we'll, you know, we'll keep tabs on each other on the progress of the student, any changes in behavior, anything that needed to be addressed, and also homework support, etc., so that we could see the progress we wanted. In that, with that collaboration, we've seen students supported to finish public education. We've seen students enter university and successfully pass the Panhellenic exams and so forth. So there's a lot of benefit that comes out of intense collaboration. And also there's other collaborations as the ministry with UNICEF and other actors has established and worked on over the years. But from our side and our experience, the collaboration has been non-systematic, let's say. Like, some schools will like be very open and really work with us in building something solid that benefits the students, and some other students will just not be up for it.
Okay. It's time for our break, commercial break. You're going to hear more from a student that benefits from the GEGO program and Better Days, so please support also Better Days. See you in a bit. I do my own.
Hi, my name is Khaled. I'm from Afghanistan, and I was 12 years old when I left home. My brother and I arrived on Lesbos as accompanied minors. After living in Moria camp for a while, we were sent to a shelter in Mytilene. There we were given the option to attend classes at GEGO Kids. When I first arrived on GEGO, I could not believe how beautiful the space was and how kind everyone were. I felt safe to be myself, I made friends quickly and started joking with my teachers, who were always open to talk with us about our everyday problems and thoughts. If we had a problem at the shelter, we would tell Better Days and they would help. GEGO was my happy place. Our teachers would make sure we had a schedule that had the basic lessons like math and English, but also we could take classes in things we personally loved. For me, those were computers, guitar, football, and photography. One of my favorite classes was photography. It was special to me because not only did I learn about photography, but also we did different projects and exhibitions, which are some of the best experiences of my life. I felt valued as a young artist. Our best work was exhibited in galleries on Lesbos and then in Los Angeles and in Washington. Another special moment for me were the performances we gave at the school every year. I loved playing the guitar, singing and dancing. I made many friends at GEGO, and even with people whose language and background was so different to mine. But we would work together in class and become friends. I also keep in touch with some of my teachers who have been like mentors to me and really supported me through difficult times. At GEGO, I learned how to coexist with people from all walks of life. I was able to develop long-lasting friendships and belief in my ability to excel. GEGO helped me realize that I could dream big. Being a GEGO student was an unforgettable experience.
Welcome back again, and you heard testimony, amazing testimony from a student that benefits from the GEGO school, and now we hear from someone that needs urgently to benefit from this program. Davoud, to you again. Many times you break my head with this. I'm wasting my time in this Greek school. I'm doing this. I'm not benefiting anything. Why? What's happening there that's not letting you enjoy your time there in this school?
It's because of the situation, and I think like the school I'm registered in right now is like the school employees, and the school employees are not that serious as they have to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like,
you mean the teachers?
The teachers or the manager, like you go in the morning, there is no like presence or like there's no one to ask you about the like presence or absence. Yeah. Seriously, you just write your name down, like, yeah, today this guy came here, like one of these students. And about the teacher, and you know, like no one speak like Greek there, even the students. There is a few, like very few students, they can speak Greek. They can speak Greek, but I don't know. They made them like they put them separate of other students who cannot talk Greek, and they teach them like separately.
Okay.
Yeah. And about the Greek teacher, like I was talking with this, manager of the school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I talked with him, like, I would like to learn Greek. I came here and there's no one like in the class. We don't have teacher. And she's always like, oh, we are looking for a teacher, for a Greek teacher. I know, I understand, like, you guys are still waiting, but it's okay. You can go and sit, and maybe like next week we will have teacher.
Go and sit.
You can go and sit, or just spend your time. And I don't know, like, yeah, mostly about the teachers. Like, we have a schedule for the daily classes, mm-hmm. but like my history like teacher, mm-hmm. like it has been like more than I was going there for 2 months, but I've never met her. I've never met him.
So in the schedule you go and read, I have history today.
Yeah, because like I cannot speak Greek. I go to the manager or whoever is there. I'm saying like, okay, here's the schedule on the wall. Okay. Can you tell me what we have today or tomorrow I can bring the books? And they're like, yeah, you have this. Okay, tomorrow I have history class. Okay, what we're going to do? Go play volleyball in the yard. Yeah, because we don't have history teacher. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And like there's a lot like there's a lot of these classes, like empty classes, and after that you just what you do, like it's you go you, even like you can go pretty late, like mm-hmm. you go at I don't know 9 a.m. and you stay there, then 11 you go and say, oh, I have empty classes, can I go home? They're like, okay, the security is like, okay, I will open the door for you.
Davoud, I'm a history teacher, can you get me a job?
You can go and apply for that school.
I miss it. I do. I could be your history teacher.
If you can give me a certificate, good. Yeah.
Wow.
That's really sucks. Yeah.
I mean, we're laughing a little bit about it, trying to poke a little fun here, but that's not fair. It's really ridiculous that you...
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some students, like, they cannot talk Greek or English. Like, you're just mute, seriously. Or, like, most of them are on their phone and just, like, hanging around with whoever can, like, they talk in the same language. Yeah, that's it. That's why, like, I stopped going, because, seriously, like, it's wasting of time. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I have a friend who knows, like, I don't know, editing.
Yeah.
In the morning, I just, okay, I'm gonna wake up just a bit later. Yeah, I go there, at least I'm learning something. But here, no. And as I said, like in the first school, like, okay, it was pretty, it was really hard just to make communication in the first school. Like, it was really good school. I couldn't talk English or Greek, but at least in first week, I could speak. I could at least say, hey, hi, good morning. Yeah.
So why did you not get to stay in that school? Like, what's the...
I changed my shelter.
So you changed the shelter and that changes the school?
Yeah, they changed the school and I applied three times to change this school. And I talked with all the, I don't know, social workers or whatever, like whoever works in the shelters. And they were like, okay, we will change. New year, they're like, okay, I'm going to send you the location in WhatsApp. Location of the new school. Mm-hmm. You follow the location, God damn it. The same school.
Oh,
the same school. Yeah.
The same school.
The same school, yeah.
No, you're kidding, right? You're serious.
I even talked with the teacher in the shelter or in that organization I was under, like under that organization. Like they act pretty good. Like, yeah, we're taking care of you. Yeah, of course, we need to, and we need to go and talk with them or something. Or like, okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the experience for each student may be different. In different schools, different shelters, it seems like it's really not balanced. So I mean, back to Elena, like, you know, what are you seeing? How are you essentially trying to create some sense of balance in the experience for the students? And how has that been maybe a little different here, like the challenges in Athens versus you were saying earlier, how it's different here than it is in Lesbos? Like, how do you kind of create that universal experience or access point? And how is that different between the two locations?
I mean, personalized education puts a lot of emphasis on the needs and requirements of the student themselves, as I said before. And like age, ambition, how close you are to adulthood, even his shelter arrangements, for how long will his accommodation be secured, for example, and so many other factors will be taken into consideration when we design an individual schedule for a student. Also, there'll be placement tests, there'll be an assessment of which language we need to prioritize. Of course, we want people to be conversational in Greek, but let's take, for example, a child with in the process of family reunification in Germany. That can take over a year. We're not going to prioritize learning Greek. We're going to, of course, motivate the student and support them through public education. But at the same time, we'll put a lot of emphasis at GECO of them becoming conversational in English language, because that's the language that they will actually suit their development, their journey in life. So in relation to Lesbos and Athens, that hasn't changed. We've always been quite systematic with taking consideration the individual, the personal needs of the student, and then developing a tailoring, let's say, a response, an educational schedule that fitted them quite as well as we could, as best as we could. But the unaccompanied children that we worked with on Lesbos were often in transition, so they weren't really investing in staying on the island, either because there was a transition coming for them to be moved to a shelter in Athens, because their shelters on Lesbos were... The positions were very limited, so they would rotate really fast. Or because they were in the process of reunification. So we didn't have long-term plans in the sense that we have now. Like our individual educational plans now can expand to a year. And like we monitor students' progress for a year, and then together we design next year and so forth. But on Lesbos, we couldn't really do that. There were shorter... plans, maybe for 3 months. Very often we'll go from having 150 students to having no students the next morning, because like most people kind of like got their notice that they're leaving in the next 48 hours. And it was often that sadden that would happen. So there was that constant mobility and rotation in our student body that prohibited us from investing in their learning in a way that we potentially can do with students like you, who have acquired their asylum here. They're really eager to learn the language, to develop their own social network here, and potentially access the labor market and so forth. So it's definitely, things are getting more serious here, I feel. Like we have an opportunity if we work together to find a way to overcome the obstacles that these kids face in public education or in accessing and or attending. The attendance issue is a serious one. Like there's a high, we receive numbers from the Ministry of Education or UNICEF of like a high number of school-age children being in public education, but then based on the reports that we're receiving from the kids themselves, and studies that have been done in the past couple of years, like 1 to 3 kids at least do not regularly attend education. And that's, you know, that's not like legitimate fear that that might not really represent reality, really, that there might be less attendance. The barriers to education are high. There's discrimination, marginalization, lack of competent staff. There's not enough staff to start with, what you're talking about. Like, we had reports of, and also complaints from the schools themselves, coordinators of education on behalf of the Ministry of Education who cannot support displaced children and youth because there's not enough teachers employed for the classes, the evening or the morning classes that have been created to help refugee children to integrate into public education. Then there is the issue of transport. All of the children that live in the camps, or most of the kids in the camps, require public transport to get to an urban center or to access a school. And they're either employed and arranged logistically far after September, like the launch of the academic year, or they're not. So that even if they're registered in public education, they're probably not attending because they cannot get to school and back. And we have kids that really want to attend GECO and make effort to come, but we had to adapt their schedule so that when they do come and they travel for over an hour to come here, A, they're given support to access transportation to come to us and go back home in the camp, but also that their schedule takes in consideration the logistical hassle they need to go through to actually get to education, to get to the city. So they'll come to school like twice. They'll come to GECO twice a week instead of like every day. It's too far away. They have other commitments. Once they come to the city center, they miss appointments. They can't queue for food. Like, so you know how the camps work. So they also go, even to come those two times a week, they feel a lot of anxiety, and often they'll call and say, sorry, my mom is sick, or this happened, or I better not come because I think today they're giving this, or this rumor about something that's been, an announcement that's been made, and I better not come. So yeah, it's difficult.
I mean, like, honestly, I understand. Like, I'm not like blaming the school I'm in right now, okay. Maybe it was a really good school like before I go there or something. But seriously, like, I can say like the problem is from the kids or whoever they go to the school, the students also, like, because in that school, like all of the students are from different countries. There's no Greek students. Yeah. And yeah, most of them are like, they don't pay attention. Or as I said, like, most of, like, actually, like, in my perspective, like, my people, like, Afghan people, when they coming, like, when they move to Greece, their plan is not to stay here. Yeah, so probably they said, okay, I'm going to go to Germany, or I'm going to go to France or UK or wherever. Yeah, so I'm not going to stay here, so I don't need to go to this school, or I don't need to learn Greek. So I will go there and I will study, I don't know, in that language. It's better for me. So here I would like to rest, or I don't know, whatever they do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it connects a little bit to what you were saying, Elena, about like there being these like major obstacles for accessing education, or these unnecessary obstacles in terms of like the camps have been moved really far away from the city center. So now you have this transportation issue that's essentially manufactured. Not to say that the camps that were in the city were livable or hospitable or following any types of humane conditions, but there were people who were fighting to keep those camps open because of the proximity to supports, services, education, things for childcare. But I'm wondering if all of this is kind of like tied together a little bit. Like, Davud, like, you're saying that there isn't a whole lot of integration between refugee students and local Greek counterparts, like local Greek students your same age.
Yeah.
In your school now, Is there any integration? Is there any crossover where you have Greek students learning with refugees from different backgrounds?
In the school, I mean, right now, no. There are Greek speakers, like Albanian or I don't know, neighborhoods, for example. Yeah, they are. But as I said, like, they know how to speak Greek, but the school teach them separately. Like, they're not in the same.
They have their own class.
Their own class, exactly. And they're mixed. For example, one of them are from the other class, but they are in one class. Yeah.
Do they have a history teacher or no?
Maybe. I've never been in that class. Yeah. But I understand that. Because you can see, like, from the environment of it, you can see, like, the, what they call it, sorry. The timing, like, they go to the, like, each hour they go to the different class. But what we are doing, we are in the yard, just like Syrian students, they're just playing volleyball. Or there's, like, African students, they're just up there, like, they're on their phone or talking with each other. Yeah.
I'd like to go back just to something you mentioned, Elena, about the low attendance on Lesbos. I remember I read this article on Save the Children website on 2021. They said in the notorious reception and identification centers, the attendance rate drops to 0.3 2021, with only 7 children out of 2,900 attending classes. From 2,900 children in these RICs, 7 children only attended on 2021. Wow.
Well, that's an attrition issue. I mean, if you have that level of no thank you, I mean, that means that you got to be looking at, you were saying earlier about how much you guys have learned by being reflective and thinking about what isn't working and making changes. And that feels like either deliberate or just indifference.
But also when kids are asked to attend education within the camps, usually the attendance does drop, especially amongst older kids. They're not interested. Besides the potentially not learning enough, they're just toxic environments. They feel disinterested to invest in a classroom that is, you know, flooded, dirty, sitting on the floor, learning the alphabet for how many months, because, you know, like, there's constant flow of new people, different levels, and then again, let's go back to the alphabet again and so forth. I think, as I said before, like, the kids themselves bring that feedback to us, and that's the information I'm also sharing here. And Better Days has been very vocal about education needing a safe space to flourish. We've been adamant about building educational centers that provide a safe, beautiful, healthy environment for someone to learn. And then everything else that we discussed before about what does learning mean, giving each person time and space to be, to play, to heal perhaps, but giving it time to define or to find its own pace of learning, you know? And hence, I think this is what also strengthens our belief that personalized education is the way forward. Both incompetency or not, I don't know, of the public educational system to adapt or respond adequately to the challenge of integrating appropriately integrating refugee children and youth into the public educational system. So I think that it's important for us to take all of these factors. It was important for us to put all of these factors together and provide an alternative pathway that perhaps doesn't necessarily give you a formal certification, because this is not a public education now. It's not public education. It's a non-formal educational center, but perhaps gives you access to pathways of accreditation. It trains you. It gives you skills, vocational training, and other skills that can help you perform well in a in 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 a in a work that you choose to do, in any work that you choose to do, invest in language learning and so forth. I still think that it's important that we try, or you try, to find your way into the public educational system if you want to graduate from a school. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, GEGO, for example, is a program that offers homework support. There are non-formal educational centers that do specifically that for refugee children and youth that attend public education and are as frustrated as you are. So you could find a parallel non-formal educational center, for example, to help you to alleviate a bit of the frustration that you feel and help you manage the perhaps the lack of support or content that you're faced with right now, but at least give you an opportunity to pass your exams. And
that's really, really, really good. I mean, I really appreciate it to be with you guys also.
He already decided to be with you. Yeah. That's it. Yes, let's sign the paper right now.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I understand the situation, like, as a student. Like, the thing is, like, the challenge in the first school, it was just, you understand the way, because you need to learn the language, then you go to the school, and then step by step, you will learn the other, I don't know, subjects or math or whatever it is. But in this school, like, you will get depression because you don't know what to do. Seriously. Yeah. I'm really happy to be with you guys.
And I think that, you know, you were referencing this education ministry meeting and these numbers. I don't know if you want to elaborate a little bit further on that. It sounds similar to, like, or a correlation here to what Davood's saying about people going there, going to these places, feeling depressed, and then that impacting the data about who is and isn't attending. So I don't know what else was, so to speak, revealed or shared at this meeting.
The problem is not necessarily the fact that they do not wish to share data. I think the problem is that they don't have the data, or the data is really outdated. There was over 12,000 kids registered in public education for this academic year, but still we didn't really have accurate data, or not accurate, but like certain data on attendance from the previous year. And attendance is a tricky one. Also for the ministry, they're still trying to figure out how to monitor correctly the movement, right? So like you were in one school, then you went to another school. Now you're not attending. How is this monitored? How is this data being communicated to whoever is looking at the data to make any sort of improvement? So because the way the data is collected, the systems are created and so forth, the data is not clear, which hence puts civil society actors, and especially educational actors, but also actors that offer MHPSS and other services to kids that are in school age. It puts them in a space where they don't have enough information to be able to tailor programs that cater to that population. And really, like, the data that I have here is very limited. As I said, like, there's over 12,000 school-age children that are registered in public education. They estimate that over 10 are active, but we don't know what active means.
Like 10,000 of it.
10,000, yeah. Sorry if I said something else. Yeah.
I was like, all of them, like just 10.
When you said 10, he said
well, the sorry, numbers sorry, from sorry. Save the Children sounded like
10,000, yeah, of them are active, but we don't know what active means. Like in better days, an active student will be a student that is attending their schedule for at least 60% of the time. Inactive, then will become a student that hasn't attended for 4 times in a row and hasn't responded to communication. So we don't know where they are, why they're not attending or whatever. So that we make them inactive, but then if they appear again, then they can be reactivated. But
they can't.
They can be reactivated. But active in terms of attendance, they should be attending for at least 60% and above. Otherwise, they register and they pass by every now and then. It's they're not really learning much, and we won't be able to
teach them.
Give them a certification that says, yeah, you met the objectives of the course and you've reached, you know, level, intermediate level from beginner's level, and now you have your conversational in this, you know, in this way, or you have this vocabulary or whatever. So I don't know what that means. Neither do they. And then we discuss a little bit the number of kids in the EB classes, the evening classes that I think you're attending, which are separate to the local students' classes. And they are focused on supporting a student prepared to be integrated into the public educational system. So they're kind of parallel to the general, to the public education, until a student is prepared and then they can integrate them into the
public school.
And then there are the morning reception classes, which are part of the formal educational system. And they support, it's like homework support, Greek language focus support. So the in the EB classes, they had more over 1,300 students registered. And in the ZEB classes, they had 2,200 students registered. I mean, how does that relate to the 12,000 kids plus that are registered in public education? I don't know, but I don't think they knew either. There is a systematic lack of data and also contradictive data, which has been addressed, and hopefully there'll be progress made.
I mean, I know that you're here in Athens in this particular sector, but thinking about how many camps are actually in this country in the hinterland and how small those communities are, it's very similar in population to, say, the islands. And we think about what it was like on Lesbos, where a city with 35,000 capacity population doesn't really have an adequate school system to handle a huge influx of new students. So this was always the excuse on Lesbos, right? Mm-hmm. But now I'm wondering what's going on in like Florina or in Katsikas or outside of the city, or, you know, like really, really far away outside of Thessaloniki, like really far from city centers where they put people. I can imagine these numbers being even lower, or there being a huge, you know, a much bigger distance between registered students and actual attendees. I mean, it just feels like this...
a nightmare. I mean, there's not even representation from the nonprofit sector, let's say civil society, in most of the camps right now. I mean, you know as well as I do, like on Lesbos, yes, it was a beast in its own, with its own merit, but there was collaboration, a collaborative spirit, there was communication with the authorities, the data was on the board all day long, every day. You could just walk past the commander's office, have a chat with them, tell them what you're, ask them what they need, tell them what you can do, look at the data. Like, there was more transparency. We could be more impactful. And also, like on Lesbos, I personally felt that I had the ability to mobilize so much resource to get shit done. Whereas in Athens, I don't. It's huge territory, quite segmented. It's difficult to get information. Our organizations are not as, I don't know, they don't coordinate well with them, or as a new actor in Athens, we have struggled to establish perhaps fluid communication channels where information, valid, like important information comes in that we can assess and then respond to. It's problematic. Like, nobody knows how many kids in the camps are attending or not attending education. There's a huge spike in mental health incidents and serious concerns from MHPSS actors that are also not being addressed. Any actor that has asked permission to do outreach inside the camps and understand the population and the needs and all of that has been really mostly rejected. It's problematic. We didn't have, I don't think we had those barriers when we were working on Lesbos. In that sense, Lesbos was an easier challenge almost, despite the high number of people or the other set of challenges that came with it.
Thank you so much for listening to us and watching us on YouTube and Spotify. And this first part is finished. So see you next time in the second part. Support us on Patreon, website, and support Better Days and Gecko School. They're doing an amazing job. Thank you to our production team. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. See you very soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, so to my camera,
Rashid.
I talk too much?
No, it's just it's no, we want you to talk too much, please.
The technology, the cameras shut off after 30
minutes. We want you to talk too much. That would also, we want you to talk too much.
All this data for Doug and then my computer just like shuts down. I'm like, yeah, I can only tell you what I have.